want to speak about a famous medrash in this week's Sedra, give you a few different interpretations. When Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, so the first words he says is, Ani Yosef, ha'od avi chai. I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? Seeming very innocent words. But the Medrash says the following on this pasuk. Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom atochacha. They to us on the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to judge us and rebuke us. If the brothers who were older than Yosef couldn't answer the rebuke of Yosef when he said, Ani Yosef, hold avichai, how are we going to answer the rebuke of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he comes to judge us for each person, for what he's done and what he is and whatever? So there's two questions here. First of all, where in the world did Chazal see in those words rebuke? Ani Yosef ha'od avichai. Where's the rebuke? He just said, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? And secondly, why did Yosef have to ask if his father is alive? Obviously, he already had asked that before, and the brother said that Yaakov was alive. And if he was afraid they were lying, right, it was obvious they weren't lying, because what were they making such a big deal to get Binyamin to go back, and that Yehuda was even willing to take Binyamin's place? If Yaakov wasn't alive, there was no purpose to it. So he knew his father was alive. Why'd have to ask again, Ha'od Avichai? So the Beis Halevi says a famous explanation of this medrash, which I'm going to tell you, and then I'll tell you two or three other ideas I was thinking of. The Beis Halevi says like this. He says that the worst kind of mussar is not where the Rabbanu Shlom starts giving you a whole tirade of why did you do this and why didn't you do this or whatever, but where HaKadosh Baruch Hu points out to you that you're a self-contradiction. Meaning the following. He brings another medrash, and that medrash, when we understand that medrash, we'll understand this first medrash. The medrash says there was a person who knew nothing, not even Aleph Beis, and he wasn't humbled by it, and just the opposite, he was making fun of Eliyahu Navi. So Eliyahu Navi said to him, look, you can make fun of me all you want, doesn't bother me, but you know what bothers me is that in the future, after 120 years, the first question they're going to ask you in the Beis Din Shalmala is, did you learn Torah? And you don't even know the Aleph Beis. Aren't you afraid? So he said, no, I have an answer, and I've rehearsed it, and as soon as the Rabbanu Shlom asks me that question, I'm going to give him my answer, and God is going to have to admit that I'm right, and he's going to usher me right away into Gan Eden. Eliyahu said, I'm curious to know what your answer is. So let's play Beis Din Shalmala. I'll be the Beis Din Shalmala, you be you. I'll ask you the question, tell me your answer. So Eliyahu says to him, how come you didn't learn anything? So the guy says, because I'm dumb. I was created dumb. I don't have any brains. And I couldn't learn, not even the Aleph Beis. And it's not my fault. God made me dumb. So he's going to have to admit that it's true. He knows that I don't have any brains, and I couldn't learn the Aleph Beis, so why is he blaming me? So he's going to invite me right away into Olam Haba. Eliyahu said, sounds like a good answer. Tell me one thing. What do you do for a living? He says, I'm a fisherman. He says, you could describe for me what you have to know to be a fisherman? He said, yeah. First we plant flax, linen. We let it grow. When it grows, we make it into rope. The rope we make into nets. You have to know how to make a net. If you make the holes too big, the fish will go right through. If you make the holes too small, the fish will see the nets. So we have to make the nets with the holes in the net just the right size. Then we take the net and we put it into the river. If you put it too deep, it's going to be underneath the fish. If you put it too shallow, the fish are going to be underneath the net. So therefore, you have to know, looking at the bubbles coming up from the fish, where exactly to put the nets to catch the fish. We catch the fish, we clean them, we sell them, and that's how I make my living. Eliyahu says, interesting. For fishing, God gave you brains? And to learn Aleph-Beis, you don't have any brains? And the person immediately realizes that he's a self-contradiction. That he does have brains for what he needs, and what he doesn't need, he doesn't have brains. The Kutzker Rebbe asks a very simple question. Did the guy have brains or not? Did he have brains? Then how come he didn't learn Aleph-Beis? And if he didn't have brains, how could he learn how to fish? So he says very simply, he says sometimes people don't have the potential to do something. But when they are put into a situation of do or die, they suddenly get the power to do it. People have been known who couldn't lift 50 pounds in normal circumstances, but if they're in an earthquake and a wall falls on them, and the wall weighs 200 pounds, they've all of a sudden gotten the power to lift the wall off of them, because they know that if they don't, then they're going to suffocate and they'll die. Some people who have not been able to learn how to swim, when they fall overboard, they learn how to swim very fast, or they don't learn anything else ever again. So sometimes when you're put in a situation of do or die, you get the ability to do things that you don't have the ability to do under normal circumstances. This guy, Taka, was dumb. And he didn't really have the ability to learn Aleph-Beis. But when it came to fishing, he knew that if he didn't learn how to fish, he'd starve. So he learned how to fish. Right? He was able to learn how to fish. If he would have looked at Torah as his life, something that was necessary, not something that, you know, take it or leave it, then he would have learned Aleph-Beis too. He would have learned Torah also. In any case, the Beis HaLevi says that is what Yosef told his brothers. You're now saying you're so concerned about your poor old father that he may die if Binyamin doesn't come home. Sounds really convincing. But Ani Yosef, remember me? Ha'od Avichai? Is it possible my father's still alive from what you did to him to me? So when it's convenient for you, then you, what's it called, care about your father. Now you care about your father and you want me to let Binyamin go. And when it wasn't convenient, there, you didn't care about your father? You sold me. Why don't you care about your father then? Ani Yosef. Ha'od Avichai? Is it possible my father is still alive? And he says that's the kind of Musar Hashem's going to give us in the future. A person's going to come before the Beis and Shemala, and the Rabbanu Shlom's going to say, how come you didn't give tzedakah? So the person's going to say, Rabbanu Shalom, I was poor. I didn't have money. You know that I didn't have the money to give tzedakah. So the Rabbanu Shlom is not going to rebuke the person and say, but you should have given anyway, and it's important, and give him a whole shiur on the importance of tzedakah. You know what the Rabbanu Shlom is going to say? Okay, I accept that. You're a poor person. You didn't have the means to be able to give tzedakah. But according to my records, on this and this day, you ate in this restaurant. This was the bill. This was the tip. For a guy who was so poor, where did you get the money to eat in the restaurant? So he's not going to give you mussar about why you should have done what you did, but he's going to show you how you're a contradiction. Here you didn't have the money to give tzedakah, but here you had the money to go eat in the restaurant. The Rebbe is going to say, how come you didn't learn Torah? How you didn't go to a shir? So the person is going to say, Rebbe, I was so busy. I had to work for a living, right? I had to take care of my children. I didn't have time to go to a shir. So the Rebbe is not going to start yelling at you and telling you, but it was important to go to a shir. You should have made time. You know what he's going to do? Take out his book and say, okay, I hear that. You're busy taking care of your children, right? You had a job. You didn't have time to go to the shir. But according to my records, at this and this day, you spent an hour on the phone speaking Lashon Hara. Right? Where'd you get that hour? For a person who didn't have any time, but you had time to speak on the phone Lashon Hara. But to go to a shir, you didn't have time? That's the worst kind of musar a person can have, where the Rebbe Shlom points out to him that there is self-contradiction. When it's convenient for you, then you use this excuse. And when it's not convenient, then the excuse is no excuse. Then you do something else. So that's what it means over here, Oy lanu miyom ha-din, Oy lanu miyom ha-tochacha. The Rebbe Shlom is going to first judge us, and then he's going to give us tochacha when we give an answer why we think that we were justified. He's going to show us that we're a self-contradiction. So that is one way of understanding this Medrash. That's the Beis HaLevi. Now let me tell you another one or two ways that together, maybe two things that to explain the Medrash in a different way. the the idea is the following. Everybody is created with a certain amount of potential. And that's really what your name is. Your name represents the potential that you have. And that's why Chazal say that every person really has four names. The name that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you, the name that your parents give you, the name that your friends give you, and the main name is the name you make for yourself. What it means is the following, that a name of a person, just like the name of anything, represents its talents, abilities, capabilities, what you're capable of doing, what your potential is. That's your name. And the potential comes from various sources. Some of your potential, your talents, your abilities, your capabilities are part of your neshama. You were created to fulfill a purpose in this world, and your neshama was outfitted with the personality, with the wherewithal to fulfill that purpose. That's the name Hashem gives you. There are certain things that are not part of your neshama to begin with, but they're things that you get by birth, from genetics, from heredity. That's the name your parents give you. Some of your talents, abilities, and capabilities come through your parents, right? You get it through heredity. That's the name your parents give you. Some things you learn from your environment. You learn from your friends. You learn from the people around you. That's the name that your friends give you. All of that is potential. It's like a big zero. If you have a lot of zeros, it's still zero. If you put something in front of those zeros, the more zeros there are, the bigger the number is. If you put nothing in front of them, it remains zero. So the main name is what you take, that potential, from what Hashem gave you, what your parents gave you, what your friends gave you, and what you develop it, what you make of it, right? So that idea is the following. There is what the person has initially, his potential, and then there's what he develops that potential and realizes it and makes something of it. The first thing is called your life, what you are. The second thing is called the ode, the extra that you're supposed to produce with the potential that Hashem gave you. With that, I want to explain the following. It says in the pasuk, "Ashira l'Hashem b'chayai, azamra l'elokai be'odi." Simple meaning, I'll sing to Hashem with my life, and I'll sing to Him while I'm still around, ba'odi, while I'm still around. But I want to say that it means something different completely. And that's the following. Why is one called Ashira and the other one Azamra? What's the difference between Shira and Zimra? David HaMelech was punished because he called the Torah Shira. Zmiros. He called the Torah Zmiros. Zmiros hayu lichukecha. He referred to the Torah as a song. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you're referring to the Torah as a song? And he punished him. What was his punishment? That he forgot that you have to carry the Aron and the Luchos on your shoulder and can't put it on a wagon. And he made a mistake and he put the Luchos and the Aron on a wagon. And then Uzzah thought that the Aron was falling off the wagon and he went to support it and he was killed. That was David's punishment. That he forgot that you can't put the Aron on a wagon, and because of that, Uzzah was killed. You're familiar with that? Parsha Nach? Okay. Question is, what did David do wrong by calling the Torah Zmiros? The Torah itself calls itself a Shira. Kisvu lochem es Hashira Hazos. According to many opinions, it refers to the Torah. The Torah is called a Shira. So if the Torah calls itself a song, what did David do wrong by calling the Torah a song? The answer is, there's a difference between Shira and Zimra. Shira comes from the word Yashar. Means it's something that's an expression of the person's essence. Shira is where something expresses its essence. That's called Shira. That's why Perek Shira. Familiar with Perek Shira? Everything has a song. Animals say this, and dogs say this, and cats say this. Doesn't mean they actually say anything. It means the essence of that creature represents this pasuk. That pasuk is the Shira of that thing. A malach, when it sings Shira, represents its essence. It expresses its essence. the sheer of a person is his essence. When you represent what you are, what your potential is, what your essence is, that's called shira. Comes yasha right away from your neshama. Zimra is something different. A zmira comes from the word lo sizmar. By shmita says you're not allowed to prune your vineyard. And the word for pruning is zmira. What does that mean? What does it mean to prune? You have a vine, it has a lot of branches. Some of the branches are weak branches, but they're pulling away power from the vine. So you cut off those weak branches, and that way it strengthens the vine and makes it produce more grapes. That's called zmira, pruning. Pruning, you prune away the weak, negative things to give a stimulus to the vine to grow better. Zmira is not the essence of the thing. It's an external stimulus to make the thing grow better. That's zmira. Psukei dezimra is psukim that you prune away all your bad thoughts and that way prepare the way for Shmona Esrei. That's why psukei dezimra comes before Shmona Esrei. First you have to prune away the negatives and give yourself an incentive to want to daven stronger. And Shmona Esrei is the shira itself. But first comes the external stimulus, then comes the shira itself. Torah is shira. It's the expression of the essence of a person. Ki heim chayenu va'orech yameinu. Torah could be called a shir, but it can't be called a zimra. That would imply that it's an external stimulus, just something from the outside. It's not mamish part of the person. So David HaMelech gave the impression that Torah is not your life. It's not the ikar. It's an external thing that helps to enhance your life. And therefore, the punishment was that he made a mistake in that exact same thing. Why do you have to carry the aron with the luchos on your shoulder and not put it on a wagon? Because the Torah can't be separated from the person. Torah is your life. It's connected to you all the time. You can't put it on a wagon and make it something separate from you. David HaMelech, because he called the Torah Zmiros, and he gave the impression that Torah is a separate thing from the person, so his punishment was that he put a tack on a wagon and made it separate. And when you think that you're supporting the Torah is not supporting you, then you think that you have to make the Torah not fall, and that's why Uzzah was killed. In any case, that's what the pasuk says. Ashira Lashem Bechayai. With my essence of my life, I'll sing Shira. Azamra Lelokai Beodi. With the extra, when I'm supposed to develop from that potential, there I need outside help to help me to prune and to develop that potential. That's called Odi, the extra. Azamra Lelokai Beodi. With the potential I have, I'll sing a song to Hashem and represent my essence, the potential I have. But Azamra Lelokai Beodi, I'll sing to Hashem Zmiros with my extra, what I develop that potential, the ode, the extra that I develop from that potential. Okay. Now let's go back to Yosef. Yosef said the following. I know my father is still alive. But is he just existing, surviving, or because you sold me and you put him into such a state of sorrow that he's not able to develop his potential and bring out that extra that he's supposed to have? That's the ha'od avichai, is the extra my father's still alive. I'm Yosef. You put my father into a depression. Ha'od avichai, is the old of my father still alive? Or he's just surviving and he's not productive anymore. He's not active and he's not dynamic. So that was the Musar. Ha'od avichai, is the old of my father still alive? In addition to that, similar, but adding another dimension. Every child of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu was promised that if he would survive, if all of his children would survive him, he would die before any of his children died, then he was guaranteed a chelik in Olam Haba. Guaranteed. If any of his children died before him, the guarantee didn't hold. I want to explain that logically. Why was that? It says that Yaakov Avinu was multifaceted. He had many, many facets to his personality. Each of his children represented a different facet of his personality. Reuven had one aspect of Yaakov's personality, Shimon a different, and so on. If Yaakov Avinu, through his entire life, would be able to interact with all of his children, then all of the qualities that he had would be brought out and perfected, and that's Olam Haba. Olam Haba is your perfection. If, however, any of his children died before him, and he wasn't able to interact with them, then that aspect of his personality would never reach its perfection. And therefore he wasn't guaranteed Olam Haba, he wasn't guaranteed that perfection. That's what Yosef said. Ani Yosef. I know that the father of Reuven is still alive, the father of Shimon, the father of Levi, but Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef, I have my specific qualities. Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? Or have you deprived him of an interaction with me, and that part of Yaakov, which had to interact with Yosef, is no longer alive. That's gone. And that's the Musa that Hashem is going to give us. We're going to stand before the Kisei HaKavod after 120 years, and God's going to say to us, I gave you such tremendous talents, abilities, capabilities. I gave you a lot of potential. Are you giving back to me what I gave you? Ha'od Chai is... You giving back extra, or are you giving back what I gave to you? Is Yaakov Avinu, have you stymied his growth? Is he just surviving, or is he producing? And that's the same Musar that we're going to have, right? And not only that, but sometimes we have to interact with other people. There are other people that just because of us could develop their potential. We're the catalyst to help them develop their potential. And without us, they can't do it. So we're going to be held responsible not only for bringing out our own potential, but the people that we could interact with and help bring out their potential, have we brought out their potential? Just like Yosef gave his brothers Musar, have you stymied our father not to bring out his full potential and remain as potential, but not to realize it? And have you deprived him of interacting with me so I could bring out that potential from him? So that is the Musar that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give each and every person. Have you given me back what I gave you, or have you developed it? And did you help develop the potential of other people that you have the ability to develop? Ha'od Avichai is the ode of our father still alive, and is my father still alive, not just necessarily your father. Another pshat in the Medrash. People do things, usually they don't do them thinking they're doing something wrong. Even when we do averas, we always have justifications. We always create a lot of excuses, justifications, terutzim, that make us think that what we did is really not that terrible. Right? We always have excuses for what we do, and justification and explanations, and in the end we think that what we did is okay. The brothers did that with Yosef. They sold Yosef, they were going to kill him, and they felt justified. Yosef is a rodeif, he's trying to get rid of us in this world, the next world, he's telling stories to the father, he wants to rule over us, he wants to take over, he's going to destroy us, just like Yishmael was thrown out of the house and Esau was thrown out of the house. He wants us thrown out of the house too. He wants to get us rid of us. The halacha is, if somebody comes to kill you, you can kill him first. And here, they thought that Yosef didn't want to kill them physically, but he wanted to kill them spiritually in this world and the next world. So they had a right to kill him. That's what they thought. And then they did a very big favor. They didn't kill him, they just sold him as a slave. They felt completely justified. They made up this whole thing that Yosef is out to get them, and that he's trying to corner the father, right, to be his father and not their father. Okay. Yosef proved to them that there excuse and their justification was not founded, was not real, was not right. How did he prove it to them? When he got them, and he could have killed them, right? Easily, he claimed they were spies, and if he would have sent them to a court in Egypt as spies, they would have been executed. So Yosef had them in his hand. He could have done anything to them, and he didn't hurt them. He proved to them that he didn't mean them any harm. Because if he meant them harm, he could, right now is his obvious chance to get rid of them. And he didn't. So he said to them the following, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. Now, all of the terutzim, all of the justifications, all of the excuses melt away. Now you see the truth, I'm Yosef. The ha'od avichai, this idea that you had, that you, I want to corner Yaakov and make him my father and not your father. Avi, but not Avichem. He didn't say Ha'od Avichem Chai. Is your father still alive? But Ha'od Avichai, that shita, that philosophy you had, that excuse you had, why you wanted to get rid of me? Because you thought that I wanted to make Yaakov Avi, my father, and not your father, and get rid of you. Is that still alive by you? Can you still justify and maintain that that's the case? Look at what happened now. I had you in my hands. I could have killed you if I wanted. And I didn't mean you any harm. So you see that what you fabricated in your mind that justified what you did to me is not really true. And that's the worst kind of mussar a person can get, where all their excuses and all the things that they said, why they did what they did, and excused it and justified it, all of a sudden melts away. In fact, the Gemara says that in the future there's no Gehenna. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take the sun, take it out of its protective covering, and the light of the sun is going to be so bright that it's going to be Gehenna for the Rishoyim and Gan Eden for the Tzadikim. The Michtam Elio says what it means is the following. Rishoyim do terrible things, but they justify it. They have excuses. And they live in a dream world where what they're doing is okay. Tzaddikim many times do things and they have doubts whether they did the right thing or not. L'ashid Lava HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make the light so bright that it's going to take away all the excuses of the Rishayim, and they're going to have to face the stark reality of what they did without any excuses. That's Gehenna. To have to face the fact that you did all these terrible things and you don't have any way of justifying it anymore. No more excuses. That's Gehenna. And the tzaddik, what's Gan Eden? To know that what you did right, don't have any doubts about it. See clearly how good it was. That in itself is Gan Eden. So Yosef's mussar to the brothers was, Ani Yosef. Look at me now. I'm Yosef. Look at me the way I really am. I prove to you that I mean you no harm. So ha'od avichai, could that philosophy that you had that permitted you to do terrible things to me because you thought that I wanted to make him my father and not your father, right, to get you pushed out of the way, is that still alive? Is that still possible for you to maintain such a thing? Can you still believe that? And if you can't, then all the excuses that you had before don't melt away, and now you have to face the reality that what you did was terrible because the excuses aren't there. That's the kind of mussar HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give. And lastly, I was thinking of the following idea. This Itaka saw somebody says this, but it fits in this medrash. The brothers didn't recognize Yosef. Right? They didn't recognize him. Because when he went away, he didn't have a beard. And now he had a beard. So he looked different. Okay, but when they were already had beards, so Yosef recognized them. That's what it says. That's why Yosef recognized his brothers, they didn't recognize him. It says that Yosef and Yaakov looked exactly the same. That means Yosef with a beard looked like his father, Yaakov. So that's what he said to them. Ani Yosef. I'm Yosef. How could you not recognize me? Ha'od avichai? Is my father still alive? If our father's alive, you surely know what I look like because you remember what our father looks like, and I look exactly like him. Must be that our father's not alive, because if you don't recognize me, that means you don't remember what your father looked like. That's exactly what?
How?
How
do you know that Yaakov was looking exactly like him?
No, because he grew up with him. Right? He was 17 years old. right? So that's the Mussar too. The Rebbeinu Shem says, what's it called? How could you not, people do Averas because they don't really recognize the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. They don't remember who he is. Right? They forget. So Lashed Lava, the Rebbeinu Shem would say to people, how could you not recognize me? How could you not know who I was? Right? Your own father you didn't know. How could you not recognize Yosef if you didn't know what your father looks like? If your father's still alive, how can you forget what he looks like? Same thing, the Rebbeinu Shlom says, how could you forget me? How could you forget what I am and do all these Averas? How could you not remember who I am or what I am that would prevent you from doing these Averas? That's also the same kind of Mussar. So that is the different ways of understanding this Medrash, and the result is that if we want to be able to answer the Mussar of the Rebbeinu Shlom after 120 years, then if we prepare ourselves properly and we don't make ourselves some contradictions, we're consistent, we don't use excuses in one place where it doesn't pan out in the other place, like the Beis Halevi says, right? If we develop our potential and not leave it just to be potential, but we develop that ode and we interact with people who we can develop their potential too, then we're not going to have to answer after 20 years, how come we didn't develop our potential? How come we didn't help other people develop their potential? And also that a person is be able to not make excuses and fool himself into thinking that what he's doing is right by creating all different kinds of excuses and justifications, but to see things as they really are, right, and to deal with reality, not to create some false reality that then enables us to do things that are not proper based on our suppositions and based on our false foundations. All of those things are what the Medrash means, right, what the Mussar of the Rebbeinu Shlom is going to be, Lashed Lava. Okay, have a good Shabbos.